guys, I have a 301 right now that is in week 4, and they have perfect attendance.
Oh, wow. Shut up.
I've never had a class have perfect attendance this far.
Has everyone seen their shows already?
I'm not sure. Maybe like all but 2 people, if any.
Wow.
It's crazy. What a crazy coincidence, right?
Is this this is a weekend class, right?
No, it's a Wednesday. It's a Monday at 3:30.
Okay.
So like, yeah, but I normally have terrible attendance on those days.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, and at the end of a summer, too.
Yeah. None of these people have lives.
Well, let's not, you know, I don't want to say that. They're all very well-rounded.
That's unbelievable.
Right. Yeah, it's a good class. And I'll say one other stupid thing they did.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know the story. And
No, not even that. Okay. I don't want to talk about that. I was just like giving a note, or I was saying something weird, and then I stopped talking. And then Sky Brandon goes, "And that is a long-form conversation." And I felt so terrible.
That's real?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I love that so much.
He full on pulled it. And I was like, you know.
Oh, my God. I love that so much. Did you die?
I died just a little bit. I got really quiet. And I was like, oh, that's embarrassing.
Oh, my God.
All right.
God.
Well, let's do a Herald. Like, basically is what happened. But it was funny. I thought it was really funny.
You have a catchphrase. That's your baby.
That was me realizing that
that's your
I've
my
created
wife.
A crazy monster.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Yeah. And that's a long form conversation. Recorded at UCB Comedy Studios in New York City. This is the Long Form Conversations Podcast with your hosts, Sean Diston and Nicole Dressbell. Hello, improv nerds out there. Hi, this is the UCB Long Form Conversations Podcast, and my name's Sean Diston. I'm here with my great co-host, Nicole Dressbell. How are you?
Hi, I'm well, thank you.
And guys, you asked for him. We have an amazing guest today. An associate of the law firm, great improviser, all around amazing guy, TV personality, Brian Foss, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Wait, who asked for me?
I don't know. Sometimes I just say things, sure. And then, you know, but I'm sure if we go back, there's many requests to get a Brian Foss. I know that me and Nicole have mentioned your name since the inception of this as a guest we want.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been actually listening to the podcast and I'm a huge fan. I don't know which ones I haven't listened to.
Mm-hmm.
iTunes still confuses me.
Yeah, it's
like,
confusing.
You have to click on like date added and try to like, you know, anyway. But I love it. I put it on my jam box and I bring it around my apartment with me.
So you're just kind of like doing things and hearing our voices?
What's a jam box?
Jawbone is a company that makes really good Bluetooth speakers.
Oh.
Are we going to talk about this for 50
minutes?
I think
so, but that was the funniest way to start the sentence. It was like, what's a jam box? And you went, Jawbone.
So you can pay very little for a Bluetooth speaker, but they usually suck.
Right.
This one is expensive, but it's really great. It has 14 hours of battery life, and they're sponsoring me this year.
Oh, interesting, interesting.
Yeah, Jawbone sponsors improvisers.
Well, I'm really glad you're listening to the podcast, Brian. And
I've been more nervous about this recording than like most things I've done recently.
Listen, we'll check in 10 minutes. I bet the nerves will be gone by then.
Okay. What are you what are you nervous about?
I think, you know, obviously nervous about talking about myself.
Right.
But also forgetting people's names and dates. I made a cheat sheet
Brian,
I realized
for the
listeners, Brian brought in a page of notes in a notebook.
More than one page, right?
No, it's one page.
I made
sure it fit as a one sheet.
Okay, great. So it's one page, but also you've highlighted.
There's highlight parts.
Sure, just in case, you
there's
know.
Dates.
I was on a lot of different Herald teams, so that was part of it.
Yeah.
But also, I've been in New York for 10 years.
Yeah.
And a lot of it blurs together.
Totally. Well, you're going to make our life a lot easier. We're not going to be sitting around going, oh, what was that team in 2009 or whatever?
Well,
Brian has it all figured out.
Amazing.
So, Brian, you know how all these interviews start. They all start the same way. Nicole?
Brian, before you took your first improv class at UCB, who were you? Where were you?
And what
were you
doing?
Oh,
who,
no.
What, where? My who was, I was a college student. I was at Brown University and I was like running the improv group there.
Mm-hmm. Excuse my
excuse me, where is Brown? I'm an idiot.
It's in Providence, Rhode Island.
Yes, that's, I knew that.
It's the smallest state, but has a really big coastline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
also sponsored by Providence.
Our improv group was called Improvidence, and someone had taken a semester away and did NYU film classes and UCB classes and came back and like taught us how to do the Herald very badly.
So you were doing long form though?
Half short form, half long form.
Okay.
And we had shows almost every week. We were performing so regularly that like campus loved improv. So that summer between junior and senior year, I took Ari Vukitis's 101 class and did like a summer internship in New York. And that was my who, what, where.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you were already doing improv in
so
college.
Much.
You were like a theater, you were into performance at like very early on.
Definitely. I even did like improv.
Brown is a big performance school, right? Because you have Trinity. Well, Trinity's associated with the graduate school.
Yes, that's right. But the it's the kind of school because there's an open curriculum and you can choose your own classes. Math majors can be in plays and can take acting classes.
Right.
I was not a math major, but that's just a good example.
Right.
And yeah, there was a play on campus every weekend. It was just like, you know, there was probably 500 a cappella groups. Just like performance was really big there. I mean, it's a liberal arts nerd school.
And you kind of went into college knowing that was...
I did theater in high school, and we even did like Whose Line Is It Anyway after school improv games with the like drama club. We called it Improv Club.
Mm.
Great name.
Wow. So you're a lifer in the improv game.
It was, and still though, like when I took my 101 class, it didn't occur to me that like improv was this
a big part of
thing that was through my entire life.
Right.
Interesting.
Because I still had other interests, you know?
What did you think you were going to do?
I don't know. Like work in like film or TV or magazine or something. Like I knew it was something creative, but like it didn't occur to me that improv was
going to be a huge
the through line. Yeah. Yeah.
So you take this RE class. Was it an intensive, did you say?
It was not an intensive.
It was like
Amber Petty was in it.
Oh, interesting. Our first name.
And it was a great class. Like, I think we met on the weekends. And, yeah, super fun.
And you were living in the city at the time doing
I was
like
living,
an internship.
Yep, I was living in an NYU dorm, which they allowed you to do for like 10 weeks. And you got to use the dining hall. And, yeah, it was super fun.
What was the internship?
It was working at a documentary film company called Global Vision, which sounds like an evil corporation.
Yeah, it sounds like a beginning of a crazy...
Yeah, sci-fi. They made like nonprofit type films. They were a for-profit company, but for nonprofit companies.
Got it. So the nonprofits would spend their money that they weren't making profits on. To the right,
yes.
That's pretty...
And we would do things for like the United Nations, you know, or a village in Africa gets electricity for the first time and we would shoot, you know, send a camera crew there.
And this was for one summer?
This is for one summer.
So you took this class. Were you like going to, like, were you like, I'm going to UCB shows, I'm like in it right away, or was it kind of split your time?
I had visited New York like during college and like definitely would like catch a UCB show if I could. Like I definitely remember going to the theater that was like in the 20s.
Yeah,
22nd?
I remember that.
Sparks Cafe, right?
Yeah, and I remember like going to a show and taking all the postcards for shows I had not seen and had no connection to and decorating my college dorm room with it.
Interesting.
Which
do you remember any of the shows that were on your college
dorm room?
There
was this one called like, it wasn't Ass Cat, it was like Butt Cat. Or like,
you're absolutely lying.
Ass, it was something like Assy. It had ass
butt
in the name.
Cat.
And the graphic was like a turd or something.
Ooh, Will Hines, if you can remember what this show is, please tweet at me. Butt Cat? What the hell could that be?
I feel like maybe the soundtrack was going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I had like a bunch of, they were just like cool graphics and I like lined my doorway with them.
Right.
Like I was such a poser.
What was your experience in the 101? Were you like, felt like you had a leg up or was there something?
I definitely felt comfortable performing and all the improv exercises and like warm-ups. But I remember after like maybe class two, like Ari pulled me aside and was like, you have to stop clapping when you edit a scene.
Oh, sure. Were you doing, was that one of those nerdy things your college improv troupe
did?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like you would like clap to be like, it's like you really, it's like the rudest way to say like the scene's over.
It was aggressive clap.
It might not
have been. So editing in 101.
Maybe it was like
probably
week 7 or 8
mm-hmm.
and like Ari like, you know, threw this at us because we were a good class or something. Yeah. But I felt confident in the class, but it's still, like, I didn't know what game was.
Right.
I had a student in my first 201 class, super talented guy, who would edit like this, and it was as if he was drawing a curtain, because that's what his college improv troupe did. So he'd edit with his hand in the air. I could demonstrate to the listeners,
like,
but they don't
did
know.
Did you ask him about it?
And he
was
you
were like, please stop?
Yes. It was one of those things, like, you let it go like 100 times. And
you're like, I need
time.
To know why you've done it 100 times.
Yeah. Because you just want to be really, really, really sure.
Mm-hmm. So you're coming from the background of like, this is how I think of it as a teacher. I'm like, oh, I'm a college improv guy coming into UCB. Was there any moments where you were like, well, I guess you already thought the UCB curriculum was something because you had someone that went down there and came back.
Yeah, and there was this weird experience my junior year where I was reviewing the Upright Citizens Brigade DVD box set for the school paper.
Interesting.
And they got me the hookup to speak to Matt Walsh and Matt Besser.
Wow.
On the phone. And this is like before technology was like the easiest thing in the world.
Right.
So like I had to like
double line them,
figure out a way to record through crappy landline. And I remember like feeling like Matt Besser was really mad at me during the whole interview. But then when I transcribed it, it was so brilliant. And like everything he said was such a perfectly worded joke or response. He just gave it like zero affect.
Interesting.
And I, as a 20-year-old, was like, I'm blowing this interview. This is going to be so bad. And Matt Walsh was the opposite. Like, so careful and thoughtful to, like, my feelings and my emotions and how the interview was going. I mean, he knew as a college student.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, a lot of his quotes were, like, non-specific.
Right.
Did you publish a transcription of it, or did you just use it to write your review?
I wrote, like, an interview. It was one of those, like, you just picked out a bunch of the quotes.
Right.
So I guess I didn't review
so it was
the
like
show.
A
yeah.
Right, right, right.
It was like a press thing.
To derail for a second, my college improv group was interviewed by Counterpoint, which was the Wellesley MIT magazine. And
Big
I showed up late and asked the, and everybody who was there already was just like making jokes. And I think like basically quoting Eddie Izzard, like nothing useful. And I turned to this girl and I was like, do you need like real answers? And she was like, oh God, that would be great. So I kept giving like real answers. And then she published it as a transcript and everyone else looked fun and I looked like a fucking killjoy. I'm so mad.
You gotta be careful.
I tried the big question I had. I was like, you know, look, I do improv here at college. Seen, you know, every episode of your TV show. It seems like the episodes are a herald.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
I was like,
expose.
Is it true? Did you guys perform? Do you use heralds you perform to write your sketch show? And they both were like, no.
Wait, really? I thought it was.
Well, maybe I'm totally misremembering it.
I thought I remember hearing.
Well, yeah, of course.
That
like
every episode
funny.
Was a herald.
Oh, well, I had just heard that.
But in that way,
we're from AS-CATS.
We should yes. all be. But I thought like the structure of the episode was written to be a herald.
Maybe.
I think they just didn't want.
I know. I think they just didn't want it to be like, yes, this is an improv show. It's not. It's a very
no, it's
well-written sketch show.
Right,
yeah.
right.
And having characters repeat
yeah,
is not like the newest idea in the world.
Right.
Like, you know, I often tell my students when I'm teaching like a 101 or it's like, or maybe more accurately like a 201 or 301, it's like, yeah, a lot of sitcoms use this structure.
Totally.
You know?
It's
yeah,
definitely sure. maybe not a herald, but you can see the influence in that. Yeah, characters come back and we almost see a second beat of them. And then at the end, they make connections.
The third beats is the way it's most like a herald.
Yeah, like yeah. they've definitely did
like. At the
like,
end of Seinfeld, usually Kramer would run into Elaine's
whatever,
boyfriend
exactly.
or whatever.
Interesting. So do you remember, so like after that interview, was this a thing where you're like, oh, I idolize these guys? Like, were you, because it's interesting that you had that experience with
that.
I know.
That was before you'd taken a UCB class, right?
Yes.
Wow. So when you're, man.
Which is a very weird feeling.
It's a very weird thing.
I like probably didn't deserve to interview them because I wasn't a super fan yet, you know?
Right.
I liked their show. I liked everything that Comedy Central like aired, you know, like.
Right.
Whether it was a Kids in the Hall rerun or, you know, their show. I mean,
well,
it's just.
They were trying to corner that Providence market and you were the keys.
You were the keys.
Oh, my God.
So then.
I mean, it's so nice that they even, like, spent 30 minutes on the phone with, like, a total nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. So then you go back to Brown, and then you graduate, and then you came back and took 201 right away?
I did. I had emailed Ari and was like, I'm coming to the city. I'm moving here. I'm going to take the next class. I took it with his wife, Betsy Stover.
Mm-hmm.
And
Betsy teaching a 201. That's interesting.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. She had a bell. Like a librarian.
Go on.
A librarian bell or a like, bellhop bell.
Like yeah.
A
yeah.
Ding. Yeah.
A desk bell maybe is what they would call it on a website. And she would ding it, or someone else in the class could get up and ding it when the first unusual thing happened.
Oh my God, I love that.
Oh,
it was so smart.
That's very interesting.
And often it made, for half the time, it made the people in the scene shit their pants and have no idea what to do next.
Interesting.
But often they were like, oh, thing I said was funny. Maybe I should just find a way to repeat it.
That's what it should feel like. It should feel like a bell goes off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I love that, Betsy.
Yeah, it was great. So I emailed Ari and I was like, I'm taking Betsy's class. I've already signed up. I would love to intern at UCB if you can put my name in or something. And I got an internship that summer.
Awesome.
And I worked in the office for a few months. I worked with Eli Newell and Ben Schwartz, who were doing the Torco. Mm-hmm. And when I got like a day job, I was like mortified.
Because you had to quit that.
And it turned out that someone on Saturday nights had just quit, and I got to take over one of the theater intern jobs on Saturday night. My first night interning at the theater was The Swarm's last night.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Were we at Chelsea at that point?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So that's a pretty big time. So then you came back into the city to take 201, and almost immediately classes are free.
Uh-huh. Right. And I took class after class after class.
And you're like in the system.
I blew through it.
And you're becoming known in to be around every Saturday night, people start to know Brian Foss.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you were like doing really well in those levels?
I think I felt like I was a very like supportive improviser, and I got very lucky because I had Chris Gethard for 301 and 401 in a row, and they were very good classes. Like Lydia Hensler, Sean Clements, Brandon Gardner. Like there were people in these classes that were that ended up becoming my first indie group.
Right.
And and I was watching a lot of improv because, you know, I would volunteer to do the gross dumpster duty so that I could watch Mother.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I would just prioritize that. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, not really going to Harold Night as much, but I was going to every
weekend
show I could see.
Yeah.
It is interesting how it feels like people are usually one or the other. Like, I don't know anybody who's there every night of the week. I feel like some people were like, I was at every Harold Night, or some people were like, I always went to this weekend show.
Mudon was a stepfather's person.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an ASCAP person at first.
That's right.
Then Harold Night, then back to ASCAP because I interned at
ASCAP. Whenever I had friends in town to like show off what UCB was, I would take them to ASCAP.
Yeah.
Because there was a chance that, you know, someone famous would be there.
Who were your favorite improvisers when you were coming up? I mean, probably Mother is up there.
Yeah. I mean, I did love Mother. Mm-hmm. Jason Mantzoukas was so funny to me, and John Daly, and Jessica St. Clair was on that team as well, and Tara Copeland, and everyone on that team was just so, so funny. Doug Moe and Christine. I mean, everyone was so funny. And I loved their form that they did, and they just like played big characters. And Ruben Williams was also that night, and there was Eric Scott.
Different type of team, but also
very
incredible,
different.
Right?
Yeah, and I think during that time, I'm already getting it confused, but I at Harold Night, I really loved Creep.
Mm.
Eugene Cordero, Lennon.
Lisa Skinner, Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
Atamanik?
Jeff Hiller.
Mm-hmm.
Atamanik, exactly. And I think Mailer Demon was a team then that I was watching and thought they were great. And I actually knew John Gabrus through my day job working at Best Week Ever. He was a PA with me for a short period of time. So
right, that was your first day job in the city, was working at Best Week Ever?
Yeah.
And you've kind of been kind of working in that field since then.
Yeah, yeah. It was like kind of, I had a really consistent job that, like, Jessica St. Clair was a comedian
on the show
like transcribing tapes for.
Oh, that's
you know?
So interesting.
I remember, like, as a PA, this was probably like 2005, there was Harold Knight shakeups. I was in classes. I was not going to Harold Knight every week. I didn't know the names of every person on Harold Knight. And like, Gabrus got the call from Justin Tyler that, because they were writing partners and best friends, that like, he's like, I got cut from Harold Knight. And oh, like, Gabrus shit. Had to like go console him or whatever. And I was like, want me to cover for you in case your boss comes by? Oh, like, it was at that point, I remember being like, wow, he cares more about this than getting fired.
Yeah.
And it was like a bell went off in my head. I was like, oh gosh, yeah, UCB is a really big deal.
Right.
So did you think, oh, I've got to start fucking up my own priorities? That's also interesting that you called it shakeups, because I do think it's the same event, but if you're not on a team yet, it's auditions. And if you are on a team, it's shakeups.
Right.
Because that's how that's your perspective
from
on
a
it.
Post-team perspective.
Right.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, but even like when I auditioned, it didn't occur to me that I would get on a team. Like, it was like, I was very much like, well, I'm eligible, might as well. It's another chance to improvise.
When were your first auditions? Was it after the Gethard Forum?
All right. I have to go
Here
to
we
my...
go. Let's go to the book.
So auditions were spring 2006. So it was the first chance I had to audition. And I had just finished the core classes.
So you just got out of a Gethard class.
And I was in the middle of, I took two 500s. I took a 501 with Michael Delaney and a 504 with Billy Merritt.
You kind of touched all the touchstones of all the like classic teachers, your Ari, your Betsy, your Merritt, Gethard, Delaney.
Yeah.
And Billy was doing like a genre class where he, like we did Tennessee Williams.
We'll talk about genre later.
Oh yeah. But yeah, so I was doing a lot of improv, and I was in this indie group called Big Tobacco.
Right. Mentioned this class.
But again, I knew there were so many students and so many people who had been through the system. I was like, well, I'll just audition and see what happens.
And?
I got on a team.
The first time?
Yeah.
This is 2006. So was Gethard in the room?
He was in one of the auditions. I can't remember if he was in the first one or the callback.
Interesting.
I'm pretty sure he was rooting for me.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, because you had just taken two Gethard classes. So like, as a supportive, like fun improviser, I think at the younger level like that, it's pretty easy to like, not easy, but I think a person like you could catch Gethard's eye and he could be like rooting for you. I think Gethard definitely roots for certain people.
I remember there were members of Reuben Williams in the room and one of the auditions, maybe it was the first audition. And I had been at
their show,
but I had really never talked to any of them, you know, and they'd never seen me improvise. So it didn't make me less nervous.
Was this Anthony King? He was the AD?
Kate was there. I think Eric Scott was there.
Interesting.
Maybe Wengert.
So what was that feeling? You didn't expect to get on. You get on.
Well, I got a call back, and then I looked at the list, and it was like, suddenly I recognized people I had seen in the like indie scene.
And then what team was this? This was
Tantrum.
Tantrum.
And that was a big team. At the time, it was 50%. Women, which was a big deal.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's still a big deal.
Yeah. It's definitely more common. But yeah, back then it was definitely a big deal.
Fran Gillespie, Chelsea Clark, Trisha McAlpin, ooh, Violet Crumbine, Greg Tukulescu, Devlin Corrigan, Jeff Marks,
and me.
Nailed it.
And well, that's nine.
This is...
Or no, that's...
No.
Eight. Sorry.
Greg...
Yeah, how long was Greg on that team?
Not long. Greg was moved to Wand. And we got Sean Clements, who was in Project Improviser at the time.
Oh, I remember. Guys, if no one knows about Project Improviser,
we
find
got
it
to
on
bring
YouTube.
It back.
Find it on YouTube.
Do
it's
it.
One of the funniest. It's still on
so
YouTube.
It's so good.
It has to still be on YouTube.
We have to bring it back.
Guys, what project?
I was, weirdly enough, I was on Harold Knight and a little envious
that
of
you
the people
didn't get to do it
on Project Improviser. It was a reality show that John Flynn created that was like Project Runway, but done at school night.
Do you remember this dress?
Oh, yeah, I remember it. I watched
There's a great, like,
Chris
Gethard
Scott
freak
like
out. There's a great.
And Marcy Giroux won it and got to, like, sit in with Ruru.
Ruru.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
But everyone looked so good on the show.
Yeah.
They were all doing great improv. And people just got plucked from that.
That's so interesting. I actually, Greg probably moved to Male or Demon, is my guess, if it was a mid-season, because he was definitely on Fwand from the very beginning, because he named it.
Aha.
Dressful.
Tuculescu named for him?
Yeah, it was like he was annoyed, I think, by the process, so he came up with a dumb name.
A fake name.
And it, like, backfired.
Wow. Dressable, coming in strong with the info here.
Just late. Strong but late.
So
that's
what was that
thing.
Like? So you get on Tantrum and you're like, this
I was
is
like,
amazing.
I would say I was probably the worst person on the team.
At the time, maybe?
No way that's true.
I feel like I was too green. And I'm not saying this to be like, guys, come on, support me. But like, I had only spent like a year in classes. I was supporting like hell, but I didn't feel very confident on the team. I felt
were you the least experienced, or were there people? Was it everyone's first team? Or
Violet had been on Herald Night, and then this was, I think, she was brought back.
Right.
Most people's first team. Yeah.
Now, so I'm asking you to like consider Sliding Doors alternate realities.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think it would have been better for you to cook a little bit longer before you got on Herald Night?
I felt like when Bastion got created, I was like, man, that was my team.
Interesting. Ooh. So that was like 6 months later or a year later?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what it felt like. But Tantrum and Fwand, it was Fwand, because we co-hosted under St. Mark's.
Yeah.
Before The Beast, before The Creek, like people did shows at under St. Mark's. And it
House
was
teams.
A big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Thank You Robot was like our go-to opener. And they eventually took over that like years later. But we did these like every other Friday. And I felt more confident and comfortable doing those shows than I did on Herald Night.
Mm.
And sometimes I was performing more at those shows because you'd get one show a month.
Yeah, two shows a month.
At Herald Night?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, wow.
Because it was only five
Oh, right.
shows.
Right. It was one night, one show with five teams up.
Yeah.
Interesting.
When did you feel like you started to get your legs on Herald Night? Did it take leaving Tantrum, or was it a few teams in?
Maybe I never felt it.
Oh, Brian, don't be insane.
There's so much anxiety about Herald Night.
Anxiety for sure.
When I was on Bastion, like years later, I felt great. That was 4 years later.
Wait, Brian, do you remember we did an indie show? I think we maybe had just met, but Bastion got asked to do an indie show and they asked us to sit in with them.
Yes.
And it was like in an apartment. It was like at Caitlin Steitzer's apartment.
Was it in like Bushwick?
Yeah, it was like B-Cat and C-Town.
And there was a bathtub with cushions that you could sit in?
Yep.
This is true.
We did an indie show where Eric Tenoy asked me and Brian Foss to sit in. And I remember being like, I get why they're asking Brian, but like, why are they asking me to do it? But it was such a fun show. And then I remember later when you got on Bastion, I was like, oh yeah, should have always been on Bastion.
Yeah.
How many teams were there between?
There was the fucking Kennedys.
Oh my God, you're on the fucking Kennedys?
I don't
remember that.
And then Scooch came after that. I think I felt confident as an improviser on Scooch, but not with the team itself.
Interesting.
Well, because at that point you were on the veteran end of Scooch.
Mm-hmm.
The fucking Kennedys. Wait a second.
That was
8-person male, all male team.
All
which
male.
Is insane.
We're talking Ben Schwartz.
Uh-huh.
We're talking Nate Lang.
No.
Nate Smith.
Nick Ross.
Sean Clements. Was he on the original lineup?
Yep, Sean Clements.
I think DC was on the original lineup, maybe?
No, Devlin Corrigan.
Devlin, right.
Mm-hmm.
John Frusciante, and John Gutierrez.
Goots, right.
Wait, did you name Brian Barebi?
No.
No, was he on the original lineup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody must have gone in later.
Too many, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Joe Spellman came later.
Interesting. And
all male team.
Sean Clements was moved to Bangs.
Tell me about this, Brian. What is it like being on an all-male improv?
I want to know what happens when you get that email.
This is some drama.
Ooh.
You know, I came here today to burn bridges.
You guys, you know we got bad blood.
Got problems. You guys know Band-Aids don't fix bullet holes.
Thank you.
We were all told, like, before the team even met, it was like, you guys better watch it. Because this team is going to Crazy Town already.
Wait, what? I'm sorry, what are you talking about?
When the team was formed,
yes.
It was like, look, this is an experiment.
Oh, great. Okay.
You all have a tendency to go to Crazy Town. Forget the all-male thing.
Okay.
Like, you're already, like, working at a deficit.
That's...
It got in my head, but it was also, the team had so, like, many egos.
That's
crazy.
I understand what's risky about that email, mm-hmm. I also think there's something like cool.
It might have been the phone call. It might have been Anthony King telling me over the phone.
Tantrum
doesn't exist anymore. But here's your new team. Do you want to be on it? And then I was like, yes, of course. You know. And then it was like, okay, this team can go to Crazy Town very easily. Be careful.
I think that's great, because I do think like talking to people like adults is good. And also like teams should know what's going to be said or what's thought about them going mm-hmm. in. So I love that. But I wonder if it stands out more because we don't do it ever.
I think the psychological mm-hmm. thing about it is like, hey, I made this team. I think they're not going to be good. It's kind of the weirdest thing. It's like,
but I wonder if
I'm expecting you to not be good.
But I also wonder if that's what was read into it. I highly doubt Anthony made 8 phone calls.
I think you could very easily I think you could very easily read into it. Like, we are probably the people he thinks are the problem on other teams, so he put us all on one team.
Yeah, I think that's great.
I mean, sure. No, totally. I mean, that's a very interesting. Anthony, if you're listening, wow, that's an interesting.
He was right.
He definitely was.
And also,
100%.
I think it's also why I'm so on board with it, because it's 100% like, it's not
right.
like it. It's nice to know that it's not like they were like, oh, finally get those fucking girls out of the way.
Well, yeah, it's like personal notes. You know, you want to hear them.
Yeah.
You know, they might get in your head.
Well,
they might derail
you. Think
you
want to hear
you
them.
You think
sometimes.
You want to hear them.
But like, I didn't get a personal note on Harold Knight until Tantrum was in its like second year. Dave Siegel, Ben Schwartz had been added to the team. Mm. We were sort of like still doing good shows, but like it felt like we were ending. But I got a personal much later, and I was like, why didn't I get this sooner? You know?
What was it?
It was to make sure that it was, you know, it was one of those, you know, compliment sandwiches. Like most supportive person on the team, but sometimes your support moves are off game. Mm. And they're filling in the world, they're grounding some sort of reality, but they're not a game move.
But gray hair, that's what makes it a sandwich, right?
but gray hair, honestly, what products do you use?
Right. That's a good note to get.
Yeah,
but
it was especially good because I actually didn't know that wasn't okay.
Yeah,
great.
It was like, oh, when you're especially when you're doing a Herald, it's such an athletic form. Mm-hmm. Every move has to be on game because you don't get time.
You don't have time.
So you said you wish you had heard it sooner. I think sometimes as coaches and teachers, we're like, we withhold notes because we think like it's not the right time, or we don't want to throw it at them. What's your philosophy on that now, somebody who coaches and teaches a lot?
I think if people are asking for it, definitely give it to them.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the
note. I usually wait. I mean, 401 is such a scary thing to.
But if you're coaching a house team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a house team, for sure, I'll let them know.
As soon as you notice it, or?
If it's like a really bad personal habit, definitely right away. But if it's like, you know, there's like vaguer notes where it's like, look, you're a great improviser, but the choices you make don't seem to be surprising yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really weird hard note to give someone. But I think that would make you funnier and better.
Right. It's almost more a diagnosis than a note, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, what if you're in a situation where, like, a team is struggling or an individual is struggling? If there's a hard note to be given, would you still give it?
Or just let the whole thing die?
I get. Is that the alternative, or is it like hospice care, and you try to get them to a place where the note will not hurt, and will be able to help?
I think it depends on how crazy of a person they are.
Yeah,
100%.
If they could, you know, hurt me, you know, if I'm like afraid to be in a room alone with a person, which
is this a real thing?
For sure.
No.
With someone I just generally am like scared of. Like, is this going to create like a million?
Well, I think that goes for any note. I think that goes for any note, though, right?
Sorry, I just turned a page and clicked Brian's pen and asked him to name names.
He's not
going to
write it.
No, but you know that feeling where you're like,
oh,
is this going to shatter this person?
But I think that I think any note, you have to consider who you're giving it to.
Sure.
And also, like, certain notes, I feel like you can't really get, like, the do more or do less notes are tough for people to hear, because the reason that they're not doing more is going to be the same reason. And if you ask them to do more, you might create more problems.
I hate the do more note.
I think it's a bad note. I mean, I don't know. There are times where...
Oh, you mean just do more in general?
Or just like...
Get out there more.
Get out there more. I hate it.
What's your objection to it?
My objection to it is that basically exactly what you're saying.
There's no way to
If they're not
like,
getting out there, there's something else that's stopping
yeah.
them. And all you've done is put a person in... If you've now added guilt to what's already right. keeping a person on the back line.
I guess maybe that's just not a good note.
I gave that note to a 401 student who was the best in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And she needed to... hear that she was the best in the class.
That's the helpful part.
Because she was being polite,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, they need you. I need you to
That's probably the way to give the note.
That's definitely the way
Sometimes
to give
we got to be like a horse whisperer, right? Like, there's this thing in the
Are
Matrix.
Are you talking about the Matt Damon movie? Was he in The Horse Whisperer with Penelope
remember,
Cruz? Or is that All the Pretty Horses?
I don't know. I have another movie reference. The Matrix.
Oh, good. I'm
Are
glad we've already moved on.
What's his name says there's a difference between
Neo?
Knowing no Morpheus
Lawrence Fishburne
there's a difference between walking the path and knowing the path and there are times where like people want to know what their note is but I could probably get to fixing it better if I could just get them to focus on something else.
Yeah, I think my least favorite note is someone plays characters a lot. It's like, I'd like to see you play straight man more. And if someone plays straight man a lot, I'd like to see you play characters more. And it's like, you know, this might be the type of improviser that they are.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
It's just telling them to like be good at everything, which isn't necessary and also might not be their comedic voice.
I think those are the notes sometimes that are like we just give because someone's asking for a note.
Exactly.
It's like we don't really have a note, so let's make up a thing that is a blind spot for them.
Because it's week five of 401. And it's time for a note.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't have a note, really.
But sometimes, I mean, for a lot of classes, the note is like, your note would be the same thing everyone's noticed, which is like, find and play games with your scene partner.
Yeah.
But
do,
we
and
can't
do
just,
more.
We
do
can't,
more improv.
We
That'll
can't
help
send
you.
That email 16 times.
I know. I can't talk about 401.
We won't get into 401.
We need to talk about 401 is my parody of the We Need to Talk About Kevin movie.
So you think 401 is a homicidal teenager?
Yes.
That's not, all right. That's not
so,
wrong.
So you get through, so you're on a few teams. You're on the fucking Kennedys, Scooch, which is a short-lived...
I mean, the fucking Kennedys even picking that name was, like...
Aggressive.
It was like, we did not have perfect attendance for that.
Mm-hmm.
We went with the name anyway. There was a list of other perfectly good names. Ben Schwartz had picked Duck Fight, which is such a great, like...
I think it's fun.
Also aggressive, but silly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a curse word and a beloved dead president's name in it.
Yep.
It's like, why are we insisting on being punk rock, you know? Yeah. Like,
yep.
We're improv comedians, you know? But that was, we had a lot of really fun shows. And I
saw some of them. They were all fun.
I remember our group scenes were really fun. And I played a lot of women for a year. Which
well, it was required of you.
As a feminist, I loved doing that.
and we thank you.
Taking jobs from other female improvisers.
I mean, quite truly in that case.
Very much so.
Who coached you guys for the longest?
I want to say maybe it was Shannon and Anthony Tamanik.
Interesting.
Shannon, I think, was really frustrated with us. Anthony came at it from a different angle, which was like, look, you're all guys. You're going to play masculine characters. But there's a lot... There are a lot more variations to men than you're showing us.
Right.
Mm.
There are fathers and sons. There are broken men. There are sad sacks. There's old men. Mm-hmm. Like, if you are going to play all men,
vary it.
And they don't all have to be yelling in a, at the stock market or whatever we were doing, you know? They don't have to all be raping
that,
an octopus.
I imagine that right. as a scene, like all of you guys just yelling in the stock market.
It was very much that, yeah.
So was that just a year of your life?
Mm-hmm.
And then
Scooch,
Scooch happens. Is that a relief?
Months. Scooch was, yeah. I think it felt like a mashup team. There was like half of the fucking Kennedys and half of another team kind of put together. And then Kate Riley was also on it.
And Nate Dern. Oh, Nate, not originally.
Not originally.
Right, right.
This is obviously a reason to have one of hundreds of reasons to have Kate on. But so that was all veterans and then one person like fresh out of 401.
Yes. And Hal Phillips was on that team too, which might have been his first Herald.
Yes,
team.
Yes, that was his first Herald team.
And Nick Ross left the team for creative differences.
Ooh, interesting.
And then we got Nate Dern.
Like a month in. So pretty early, right?
Yes.
And then Darcy moved.
Yes. And then we got Lauren Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of shifts in...
In like 6 months.
Nicole, I cannot believe you know all of this. You know it better than I do.
Well, but Scooch was like a peer team to make, because that was the Robert Barron auditions. So I think that's probably why, because those are a lot of people I knew. So I paid attention. That was my G-chat.
I was wondering how long it would take for you to bring up Robert Barron.
Oh, shit.
As a fan of the podcast.
We haven't done Robert Barron in a little while.
I'm kidding.
That's so funny. So Scooch, you're saying, you said, like, didn't feel great about the team, but started to feel good about yourself as an improviser.
Yes, I think I finally was really, truly getting game and initiating premises that were going to be active and fun and that I could play, you know? Like, I felt much better as an improviser and confident. And looking at my cheat sheet, there was what was going on during that time was that I had just taken the end of the world class.
Oh,
Will
right.
Hines.
And that was a turning point for me. Yeah.
That would have probably overlapped with Scooch a little bit, right?
A little bit. Was like I think I was in the end of the world class when the fucking Kennedys were still a team because I was feeling like I wasn't getting enough improv.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
The Under St. Mark shows that we were doing with Tantrum and Fwand had kind of dried up because the team switched, and so I felt like I wasn't doing enough improv, and I was like missing the thing that I really loved. And Will's class was so inspired. It was.
Yeah. I mistake this class for maybe the one Wangert did that you were in.
That's
the first half.
Time Capsule. What was
the improv nerds out there? It was the end of the world. The first half was an evente, based off a suggestion. You would do an evente that was some sort of science fiction.
Apocalypse.
It's the end of the world. We watched the world end. That was the end of the first scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then we deconstructed it. We kind of went back in time and went through all the different characters that were.
And all the things that led to the end of the world.
Uh-huh. And then we saw the end of the world again with, you know, everything we had learned. Then the lights go down. And then Will, I think, came on the speaker and said, and then sometime later.
Mm-hmm.
And it came up in the second half of the class, did a mono scene in what the world was like after this apocalypse.
Whoa.
Yeah, like a post-apocalyptic.
That's very cool. I don't remember. I don't know if I saw that. One thing I do remember is you guys would like go to Harold Night and like stand out on the by the line and hold up signs. Maybe someone in your class did that.
Maybe Dave Blumband did that.
The end is near. Signs.
End is near.
Maybe Ben Ricky.
You also wore black pants and solid colored t-shirts.
That's right.
That was a
It was either a black shirt and colored pants, which were very in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or.
Which is very in at the time. Are you familiar with American Apparel jeans?
Oh, thank you. That's also written on your note.
Yeah. There's so many great people in that class.
Yeah, that sounds like a very fun class to just kind of have
super fun.
That was a really good class.
Right?
Your lover, right?
Yes.
That was funny.
He was so funny in that class. Everyone that could make physical choices and like just really kind of embody a character like did so much better in that class because we were doing genre.
Yeah. And then
second time genres come up for those of you playing at home.
So hard.
Billy Merritt was the first one, right?
Did you so after Scooch, was that to Bastion?
Mm-hmm.
And how did that feel? What was that like?
That made sense. It felt like very natural. I had been like kind of sitting in with Bastion in their indie shows. I had done like that show we were talking about with the bathtub.
Yeah, I remember that.
Gentrify, if they were down someone, they would just ask me. I was friends with all the people on Bastion, Oscar Magallanes, Aubrey Tabak.
Were they
Lydia,
basically just waiting for somebody to leave to add you to it?
I think there might have been.
Brian Barrett
moved.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, it wasn't Brian Barrett, because you were on a team with Brian Barrett.
Who did I replace?
It wasn't Oscar.
Would it have been Gardner?
Was it one of the
No, Aubrey replaced Gardner. Oh, Maggie Carey maybe had come back and then left?
Yeah, I have no idea.
But I was, anyway, Frucci. I mean, I'm friends with,
So you replaced someone, you're going onto this team that you'd sat in with, and these are like your peers coming up in the indie community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And did this feel kind of like, this is where I belong on Harold Night?
Yeah. And granted, it was like their fourth year.
Right. They had been on Harold Knight. Yeah.
It was my fourth year. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah. Now, we didn't, I demurred from asking about this when we had Lydia on. But at that time, Bastion was like doing some Spanx, trying to get like a.
I wasn't on
Harold
the team
Knight.
Then.
So that was before you.
Uh-huh.
So by the time you were there, did it look like or no longer look like Bastion
well, maybe
could be
I
moving to the
John
weekend?
Murray.
Who moved to Ruru? That would
yeah,
make sense.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
So they were no longer doing like weekend tryouts anymore when you were there. Or was it still on the table that team could move to the weekend?
No. I don't think it. I think that ship had sailed.
Right.
But it was still a great Herald team. We weren't anchor slot, even mm-hmm. though Bastion had been anchor slot for like a
long
year
time.
Before yeah. that.
Because at that point, Sandino was on the scene.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And they were so consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it didn't seem to bother anyone. I don't know.
Because you got, they had been doing good shows for years and years. I don't
And
think...
also it's the kind of thing where you're like, well, we get to go earlier.
Yeah.
Sure. Right. Because at that point,
I'm not tired.
Anchor
like 10,
was fifth 30. Slot.
Yeah. It was
yeah.
like 10. Or
yeah.
30. So how long were you on Bastion for?
Less than a year.
Less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bastion gets broken up, and for a hot morning, you are on Badman or Bangs?
You know this.
Oh, yeah.
I was
this.
On Badman.
I know this story.
This is my favorite.
For like 10 hours, I was on Badman.
And then...
The original lineup of Madman? Or they... No, they had asked for you.
I was... I don't remember. But I was moved to them.
Replacing someone.
Yeah. And then I was here teaching a class. I was actually subbing a class for John Gabris. I was had been a teacher, you know, for like that year,
mm-hmm.
and they, I was like in the teacher's lounge at the old training center, not the old training center, which I also had gone to, mm-hmm. but the, and Fran came up to me and was like, "Hey, can I ask you something?" And I was like, oh, "She's gonna ask me to sub a class for her. Like, what does Fran want?" And she was like, and I was like, "Oh yeah, but I mean, I've got to go teach this class in like 3 minutes." She's like, "Will you be on the law firm?" And I was like, yes.
Had
yeah.
you sat in with them before?
No. And
interesting.
She said, "We're all here right now. Do you want to come meet everyone?" I went into a classroom that they had just
That's
had a
so
rehearsal in.
Funny.
And I knew everyone on the team from
Wait,
different.
Wait, they were rehearsing?
They were a weekend team at that point, right?
They were a weekend team. And they were doing a brush up rehearsal with John Lutz.
Oh,
and he wasn't there anymore. Like, the room, like, I think the only people I felt like I had to, like,
meet
maybe, like, Nate Lang and Sue Galloway.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it was such a blur. It was like, but there were people that I was like, oh, hey, Matt Moses, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, we worked together. Like, Matt Fisher and I went to the same college. Like, we definitely, yeah, he had graduated by the time I got there, but like we were in the same improv group and I knew about him. And there were like people, Fran and I were on our first Herald team together. It was, it felt very natural, but at a complete surprise.
Yeah. I think Michael Caine was involved with that shuffle somehow. Like Caine moved, and then I think Frucci replaced.
Oh, I mean, there were then like a bunch
Eddie
of
Eddie Dunn took my spot.
Eddie Dunn took your spot.
Yeah, I remember law firm. Clearly so excited to get you, but I think was like sufficiently embarrassed.
They should have made that decision
the night before.
Yes. 100%.
They did not get their shit together.
The day of. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Anthony must have been very
upset. I mean, they probably needed as it's such a big decision, but you kind of need to like get everyone in the same room.
Definitely.
Yeah. And email chains suck.
That's crazy that you had never sat in with them and they were just like, yeah, we like this guy, Brian. Let's bring him in.
I had done this
thing.
I don't think
sitting in was such a big thing.
Back then. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's complicated. Like, it's the sit-in thing is so problematic.
Yeah,
and,
because everyone's freaking out about having to sit in.
Right. And, like, sitting in with a full team, you might not actually do much in the show.
Yeah.
So then you can't really see if someone's a good fit. And I had just done this thing that Anthony King organized. Called the Mega Go Round.
Oh God, I did
oh,
that.
Oh, was this the Giant
so
LaRonde? The Giant
It was a
LaRonde.
Giant LaRonde.
I loved that show.
And we all sat in the front row.
Yeah.
And I did a scene with Josh Patton and a scene with Megan Neuringer.
Great.
And it was so fun. And I think someone from the law firm saw it. I have this memory that like Sue was actually there mm-hmm. at like an 11 o'clock show watching. And Sue and I didn't know each other. really that well at that point. And maybe Fran was there. So I don't know why. Maybe they watch Harold Knight and like mm-hmm. we're like, we're gonna scout people.
That's a crazy just like
and that happened the week that week.
Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, immediately you're now on this team that you had. You were like, oh, I'm happy to be on Batman. And then all of a sudden, that's so crazy.
Mm-hmm. It was really crazy.
And yeah, then.
Yeah, I don't think Batman was. I mean, I think they were happy to get Eddie, but I don't think they were thrilled by the process.
No.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think they were happy about it.
That was a dramatic day.
It was. Brian, and always in the middle of drama.
It's always a shake-up.
I'm here. I said it from the beginning. I'm here to burn bridges. How many bridges have I burned so far?
So I have a question here from it's perfect with our chronology here. It's from Cameron Azarm, asking lots of great questions these days. Did you adjust the way you improvise from when you moved from Harold Knight to The Weeknd? This instantaneous move.
Yes, I did. I think you know, not having to do second beats means you can kind of blow out a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
You can support the scene from the back line in a way that you might not. You might save on Harold Knight, you save an idea. You're like, actually, that walk on would be a great second beat initiation in a different location.
Right, right, right.
I'll wait for it. You kind of have to put things in your pocket. Where like on The Weeknd, you don't necessarily have to do that.
Yeah, you don't have.
You don't have to call things back.
Yeah.
You only call back the best stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was like the biggest immediate change. Also not practicing.
Yeah, that's a huge thing for me. It's like learning how to stay consistent and not practice.
Mm-hmm. So like that was like a big difference. And I would say also like The Weeknd audience is different, as you guys both know.
Yeah.
But, you know, they respond to characters. They respond to things that are like discovered in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be in on it. And
because they don't know the like ins and outs of the opening and the prep. They don't know that part.
No.
They just kind of want to see the like instantaneous magic that they can immediately.
They actually really like organic
scene
moments.
Yes. Yeah, I think they do.
But they also love you blatantly calling something back. That's a thing I'll never be able to do.
Yeah.
Where you're not initiating a game. It's not a premise. It's literally like you just say a thing that was said earlier and they die and I can't do it.
I will say that the law firm is so good at that.
I
think we did a show the other day.
I literally am thinking of a moment where there was just like, well, wonder who's going to walk through that door. And then Sean was just like, it's Mr. T again. It was like something that.
And they were just like, no.
It was like an applause break.
And there was also a show where like, I think I said Kansas City and people had been, or I said Kansas City barbecue and people had said Kansas City before, and like a show stopping woo from the like outside the like they love when you say stuff
I can't,
that they say.
I'll never be able to do it.
They love it.
Because they also feel like when I try to do it, the audience is like, hack.
I think that's the voice inside your head.
That's the little dress.
So we talked a little bit about, or you mentioned that you were teaching. When did that start? What were your classes?
I'm gonna refer to my notes.
Yes.
I audited Doug Moe's 301 class.
Great.
Summer 2010. And I got a 101 right after that.
Okay.
And I taught a lot of 101s and 201s. And then sometime later, I started to teach advanced classes.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't taught. I'd subbed a bunch of 301s and 401s, but I hadn't taught like a 301 or a 401 that was my own until this year.
Now, this is interesting to me because you've also usually kept a full-time job. I don't think you've ever become like my main source of income is teaching.
That's true.
So how do you figure out then when you want to teach or what you want to teach when it's a little bit more about freedom than about?
It's tricky. Yeah. I think you just have to pick a time where you won't resent it.
Yeah.
You know, if it's like, you know, Monday nights are always slow at work. So that's a time where I know I can get away.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, when I first started teaching, I would teach on the weekend.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was weird, you know, to be like, you know, tell my husband, or at the time, I guess that was, he was my boyfriend. He's
whatever,
still my boyfriend.
Whatever,
not,
America.
I think lover is the word that we use.
My lover. But I'd be like, yeah, you know, like, I'm teaching like a noon class. Like, you won't even notice I'm gone, you know? I'll be back at 4.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, when I wasn't teaching, I missed it. And I usually only taught one, sometimes two classes at a time. But it was something I missed. It's like it's a different muscle and it's a different part of my brain, and it's like I noticed it was gone. And so, yeah, I kind of kept, you know, a class under my belt,
yeah,
you know.
Stay in there.
Five years. I guess I've been teaching for 5 years.
I think not having a full workload of classes has probably helped you from that like heavy burnout.
One time I had a 101 and a 201 at the same time, and I felt like I didn't know everyone's name. I was like always referring to the sheet. And I had a 101 that was like a lot of like ESL students. Like I think they were like visiting New York all at the same time.
So there was a language barrier.
And there was this like, and I felt like that's when I like lost my mind. I was like, I'm going to go back to one class at a time because I just was like, this is, you know, they're taking improv to help their English.
Yeah. You don't have time for that.
what was your first, when and what was your first ASP?
Advanced study performance.
I think I taught Laurent Taj.
Mm-hmm.
This was a 600 probably?
Yeah. Yeah, it might have been. Yeah. And super fun. It was basically the form that the law firm was doing in the second half of the show. And no one had really like intellectualized it. So I was like, I'm going to try this and see if this is like a thing. And there were some like so many funny people in that class. Like Jackie Jennings took that class. Jesse Lee, Ben Wheatmartian took that class. And he was so funny. I mean, I was like embarrassed how much I laughed teaching, like I was supposed to be like in charge, and I just was like, hey, everything's really funny, great job everybody.
This might be too much Sausage Is Made or Inside Baseball, but you've taught a few ASPs now, like four I think, or you're going into your fourth. What do you look for when you're figuring out that cast list?
I mean if I've seen the person perform, it's so much easier,
sure,
because you're just like, oh, I get it. They're funny, I get what their sense of humor is. I think you want like a mixture of people, obviously, different improv styles. But I think I'm looking for people who are really consistent. So if like their teachers are kind of like always saying like this person just like can carry a show. Every one of their scenes always succeeds. Like they can heighten. They can like, they're versatile. They can, and maybe this is the classic you guys have talked about on this podcast before. It's like you try to look for things that you think you do well, you know? And it's like, I think I'm a versatile improviser, you know? And so like, I look for people that can do that too.
I think it's interesting because students often complain about this process that they might feel left out or it's the same people taking classes. And like, I mean, in the end, we are saying that these classes were trying to cast the best class. So
casting hurts people's feelings.
It kind of sucks, but like, yeah, I remember the process of like looking at mine. I was like, who has the most accolades? Who are the best people? Why would I, you know,
Like the Laurentage class, I was like reading in between the lines. If someone was like, this person plays lots of characters,
that's
you know, and then the rest of it, I kind of ignored where it's like, I'd like to see them, you know, play straight man more. I'm like, I don't need that.
I don't need that for this class.
Yeah.
Right?
It's interesting. I guess it depends on like whether
really,
or not.
Really, really, really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you know people or you feel loyalty to people.
And everyone applies. The numbers are staggering.
I guess it depends on whether or not you're thinking of ASPs as a learning opportunity, in which case, like, part of my heart feels like everyone deserves that.
Yeah.
Or if it is a professional opportunity that also happens to provide learning, in which case it's going to go to the most qualified people the most often. And I mean, I think it's
11 o'clock on a Tuesday is a hard time to bring the energy.
Yeah.
And if you're like not ready to perform and bring it, someone else is.
Yeah.
I think it also comes down to like the teacher is now taking more responsibility for this class than any other class.
Yes.
Like in a way the teacher becomes a part of the creativity of this class. Like you kind of judge the class. Like 10% of it, you're judging the teacher, right? So like, If that's the case, why would a teacher go out of their way to be like, well, let's get these people who haven't done it before. Maybe they could benefit from it. I mean, it's tough. It's very tough.
I will say that it's such a tough process that I actually, for one of my ASPs, asked Eric Tenoy to select it.
Interesting.
And
I think I've heard of that before.
And it was the first genre class I taught. And the kind of stipulation was, you know, priority would be given to people who have never taken an ASP before.
Ooh, interesting.
And that was the one thing I was like, you know, I've heard so many people complain about the process. And so I was like, maybe we just let the veterans know, the veteran advanced students know that this might not be the one for them.
Yeah.
Great class.
Yeah. My time capsule was all people who hadn't taken a like 4-week ASP before and Juan, because I have no self-control.
Well, I think that's probably.
How can you not put Juan?
I mean, that's
class?
The other
side. Juan Nicolón?
Yes.
That's the other side.
My new class.
That's the other side of the argument is like, yeah, you want to pick the best people, but you could still pick people who haven't taken it before and still have an awesome class.
Yeah, totally.
So, there's such an embarrassment of riches with talent theater. It's crazy.
All right, let's talk about it. We've mentioned it many times, genre.
Oh, yeah.
We had Dave Murray just write the word genre in all caps when I asked for questions.
No way.
He wants to know about genre. Now, you've taught
he
the genre.
Took, the genre.
I think he just wants you
the
to
The genre,
talk.
Too.
I think he just wants you to talk about it. And yeah. I'd be interested to hear it because I think about genre sometimes, but I wonder what the like fully intellectualized form of that discussion is like.
Yeah, I mean, the basic idea is that, you know, normally when we do improv, our base reality is our real lives, living, as Amy says, like living life
right
on stage. And then we find the unusual things based on off of that. Well, when you do like genre scenes, the base reality is our collective knowledge of
the genre,
film, TV, fiction, comic books, video games, whatever, and playing up those genre tropes and then finding still the unusual thing
within
that world.
One of the examples I always use with my class, and maybe not even talk about genre, but just like if you're in a reality that isn't our reality,
mm-hmm.
I always give the Wizard of Oz example of like in the Wizard of Oz, it's unusual to have construction workers
right
building the yellow brick road. So, and then they're always like, oh, that makes sense.
Right.
So I mean, that's the only thing I think about with genre.
What's great about it, though,
yeah.
is that, and similar with improv, if you're a good actor, is that the audience will laugh if you just do the scene. If you're in a break room at an office and you mention specifics like what the company is,
right,
what the coworkers are like, what's on the table, what's happening in your life, if you mention real specifics, the audience will laugh because it's improv and it's delightful.
Right.
And when you do genre stuff, if you mention things that are recognizable, if you add details to your scene that people are like, you know, this is what The Matrix is like.
Right.
There's lots of philosophical, you know, questions, and there's always like a wise black man with tiny Oakleys.
Interesting.
If you like add all of that, those details, they will respond, and it's like they'll love it. They'll love you for it. And then it's easier to get to those hilarious places.
Yeah.
When you're teaching the class, mm-hmm. what percentage is dedicated to working on the skill set of being able to build the genre, and what percentage is like just game and the textbook skills that we use in all classes?
I think people that have been in my genre classes, it's a self-selected group. So they're mm-hmm. good at it.
Gotcha.
They're already good at it. And what I usually say is like, look, you only need to, it only needs to make sense to 40% of the audience. Because if they've never seen it, like, it doesn't matter, you know?
Right.
For the people who know what you're talking about, great. And, you know, when I first came up, it's like a pop culture reference was considered very, like, no. And I think it's because it lacked the commitment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of was a selling out of the scene and not...
Right.
Like, yeah.
And it's like, well, if people don't know, you know, your manga comic book, they're not going to know this. And it's like, well, they've probably seen Pokemon on TV. They've probably seen a comic book store. Like there's like things they might actually right. have access to. So like try.
What was the form like? Was it just there'd be a genre set up at the beginning and then every scene was in that genre?
I actually stole the form that I watched back in 2005 when Robin Williams was doing As Seen on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They would take a audience member's wallet apart and dissect it, and then they would make a TV channel for you, for this one person. So this was, you know, Sean TV, mm-hmm. Nicole TV. I kind of took that, and that was our opening. They would kind of take dramatic poses on the stage and kind of in almost like a movie trailer form, yell out little specifics. And this was also kind of taking an idea that Will Hines gave me in End of the World, which is called Genre Cauldron.
Oh, yeah, Genre Cauldron. Great.
Where you throw specifics into the... It's essentially Genre Cauldron, but done kind of theatrically. and you could do lines of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of like get everyone on the same page. And hopefully you find games within that. The first scene should be what I call a cliche scene. It should be the most obvious kind of scene. If it's a film noir, it should be a detective and a femme fatale smoking a cigarette, talking about crime. Like, go ahead and give them the most obvious thing.
Right,
you know?
Get it out of the way early.
And that's your chance to kind of set the scene, set the world up, and then also get out some of those details. So it's almost like you're, it's not like you're doing a deconstruction, but you're just like getting everyone still on the same page. So it's almost like two openings, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then we sort of just do a montage of scenes that deconstruct that genre. We really avoided plot, and I know some of my students in this last genre class struggled with that because they're like, but some of these genres are so plotty.
Yeah.
So I created this thing that maybe never worked, but I was like, don't worry about plot, but every show exists in the same world, every set. And so try to find a conversation that exists in this world. And this is another Will Hines idea, which is like, the rules of this world, everyone knows about blank.
Right. Everyone's kind of talking about the election and yes. weird. Like, yeah,
and that
yeah.
might end up being the way you end the show. It might also not. Like this last class, it was actually not in a show. It was in a rehearsal, but they did a scene that was like kind of a Downton Abbey genre thing. And the conversation that everyone was having, no matter what the scene was, they'd kind of like take a break and be like, did you hear about this Adolf Hitler?
Great.
He's got some great ideas. So handsome. So this conversation was, everyone was sort of like gaga for Hitler. That's so right. Funny. And then it turned out he ended the show. Like, he visited and they were all so happy to have him there because it was 1912 and he yeah. was a young artist or something, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, so
and it was that conversation
led
gave
to
us
something.
A plot, but each scene had its own bit and its own game. And that was really important because plot's really hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
And often not that satisfying.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and disagree, but I don't want to get into it.
Are you a big movie form fan?
No, whatever.
It's literally the worst thing
it.
You can do is just say you're going to disagree, but refuse to engage
well,
the
me
conversation.
And Nicole, I just feel
is
like
because we're running out of time?
No, we're not at all. Me and Nicole have just had this argument. I've exhausted this
many times.
He
knows he's wrong and he doesn't want to put it on tape.
I mean,
ask
like
your
Baby Wants Candy. We were talking about this before Sean showed up. Mm-hmm. It's musical improv is so hard.
Yeah.
And people love watching it because it's so challenging. Mm-hmm. And music is, you know, makes our brains light up.
Super hard, yeah.
Baby Wants Candy would do like a half hour musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the plotty scenes were way less satisfying. And the show almost always fell apart plot wise to me. But it's hard to imagine it without.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My only thing with it is I feel like, yeah, it's hard to play plot for sure. And we tell people not to play plot because I think it leads to some very bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the best shows I've ever seen have used plot and game simultaneously.
Oh,
there
yeah.
are a lot of them are mono scenes for sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think there's a place for it.
And sketch too. Like, yeah. I love sketch that's, you know, all a 30-minute story.
A one act.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Brian. Of the genre classes, did you have a favorite set? Did you have one set where you're like, ooh, it all came together?
Oh, God.
Like, I just taught my first ASP, and I thought we got close so many times.
I feel like the classes and the rehearsals are always funnier than
the
shows.
Yeah, the rehearsals are going to be amazing. Yeah.
And it's because it's a safe space.
Yeah.
And everyone's, like, losing their minds in a, like, comfortable way.
Was it a rehearsal set? I mean, I would say the best set of my ASP was in rehearsal for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might have even been two back-to-back sets that were like the best.
There was this one that the last class did that was so, so funny. It was like a Disney Channel original movie.
That's a great genre
yeah,
to play.
It was so funny. And they even did the commercial breaks, which was a challenge to get them to do it because it was like, movies were the easiest genre to ape.
Right.
But they did commercials, which was really fun. But basically, it was about like this family was going to the zoo for the day, and supposedly Justin Bieber was going to make a surprise performance. And it had all the, you know, angsty teenagers, divorced parents that end up getting back together, like all that great stuff. Mm-hmm. But they did a full on, like John Wayne did a, oh my God, did like the Justin Bieber performance. And they had like an opening, opening musical number that, oh God, if I could sing it right now, I would. But it was like they created, Jake Smith is also a very good singer. And they like, in this set, they created a musical theme song to fit a cheesy, poppy Disney Channel original. And it was so fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
And still very much in the style of UCB where like, there was like the stage collapse at the end, crushing someone. I mean, there was like, things were still like very, very loose.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That was maybe the one that stood out the most this past time.
So as a teacher, let me ask you this. You've coached teams. You've coached house teams.
Sure.
What's your experience doing that? Do you feel like do you enjoy it as much as teaching?
Good question. It's certainly easier because there are fewer people.
Right.
And they all are working together. I think it's harder to make them great.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like if it's just sub coaching, it's more like you're there to cheerlead, you know, and that's like breezier. I've been there. I know how anxiety ridden the Harold Knight experience feels, but in general, I'm like, they'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know, but to make a Harold team great as a coach is very, very hard. And I don't think I have what it takes to do that.
I mean, maybe you just don't have the time because have other, like a real job.
And it's amazing. Things. I mean, because like, I mean, we had Zach Woods on my first Harold team, Tantrum, coach us for 7 months.
That's incredible.
We didn't know you could switch up your coach. We were like, he was, first of all, great for us, but he was also like, he was so smart.
Did you guys choose Zach or was he? Okay, yeah.
And he was available and he was like younger than most of us at the time because he's still younger.
Yep.
How does age work? And he had us doing these like exercises that were so hard. Like that one where you go A to C and then guess the B.
Yeah.
Do you know this
one? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It is so hard.
No, I don't even know if it has a name, but I like it. I think it's so interesting. I have never had it do anything but aggressively fail as a warm up with a team.
It is
to the point
way
that I keep telling myself to stop fucking doing it, and then I do it anyway.
But like he would do stuff like that it was like, wow.
That's one of those things where if you get a team to do it well, you're kind of like, oh my God,
it's so hard. And also like, and then it doesn't go well, and then they get mad at you, and now you're like, okay, great. Let's make a back line. Let's do some more.
Oh yeah.
Also, Zach, he was Robert Barron's first coach. I might be burning a bridge here. Could also get so sad. Things did not go well.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kevin Mullaney had a great article that was on the IRC at the time when I started coaching.
Improv Resource Center. This is online. I don't think people go
before
to it
before Facebook
much
had the feed.
Yeah. There used to be a whole
message boards existed. But he wrote this article about how to deliver hard notes.
Oh, God.
And he was like, it's people want hard notes, but delivered with positivity. What often happens with teachers, and this is like a teacher pedagogy, you know, theory, teachers give soft notes, but with negativity. So it's like, I don't know. I don't want to say you guys are all doing really well. great Harold, I guess. And I mean, obviously not everything was perfect, but you guys are going in the right direction.
Oh, yeah.
They hear the tone.
Right.
And that's worse than being like, all right, you guys know that was crap, right? You know
I
that was crap.
I completely agree.
You were off game for the group games. They were a mess. You would be totally deducted on Harold Knight for that. But it was hilarious. You guys know it's hilarious. You guys don't have to worry about being funny. You're really funny. You're being lazy improvisers.
Yeah.
Cool? They hear that note better because you're actually doing it with love. And Chris Gethard was great at that.
And it kind of also is saying like, I know you can do better. And the other way is kind of like, I don't know if you can do it. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh God, I love that. And Gethard is so true. Yeah.
Like you're saying, Gethard was a person who was very good at it. He talked to you like you should be better and you like, and it right. was respectful.
Where like Ben Rogers, I think, you know, sub-coached once, and he was like, his energy, he was like nervous to give us a bad note.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because he was like maybe new to coaching or new to teaching, and it, this might've been like the fucking Kennedys. Like we had him sub in. Also a scary room of eight aggressive mm-hmm.
dudes. Yeah.
And I remember just being like, oh, he seems like he hates us. And really, he just probably didn't know how to deliver the note in a sincere way.
I think when I first started giving notes to like a Herald team, I was nervous. So I think I would come off harder than I wanted to. I'd walk back being like, man, I really dwelled on that thing for so long. Maybe I was just like, it was just like you're saying, you're nervous to give the note. So it kind of lends towards negativity in a way.
Do you ever find that with classes or shows, you do experience like disappointment or actual frustration that's hard to mask?
Mm-hmm. And I think for coaching a house team, it's really hard because I've been there.
Yeah.
And I know how important it is to them. And it's hard not to internalize their anxieties over a, you know, B minus show or C plus show.
Or I remember seeing teachers get really worked up when I was coming up and being like, okay, I'm never going to get like that mad. And then like having my first 201 show where they like talked over each other and they made like backline moves that didn't support and they negated. And I was like, so mad. I didn't think I could go backstage and give notes.
You're kind of mad at yourself. You're kind of like, how did I know?
Absolutely not.
I guess the way I think of it sometimes is I'm like, fuck, I didn't get through to it. Like, they didn't hear what I was saying. I don't know. Sometimes I take it personally, I fucked up.
I think because the kind of things that get me mad are, like, their spirit problem. Stuff. It's, like, bad treatment. I'm like, there's no way I can be blamed for that.
Totally.
But, yeah. And then
I think, like, the most disappointing
notes.
Thing is if you worked on something in class and you really felt like it was presentable to a human audience, and then they did improv. But it wasn't the way you had worked on.
Like they got in front of an audience and basically
and they went back to doing back like to, a fuck around.
That's
indie
the
show.
Most frustrating thing. That's the most frustrating.
And it's like
thing.
You guys already knew how to do that. Why'd you do that? You can do that anywhere,
right? Someday we're all gonna die, and we came out here to watch you do the other thing.
Yeah.
And you did a thing we can see all the time.
And so it's a little bit like you're like, did you not trust that my ideas were good?
Oof. Yeah.
So there's that insecurity.
Yep.
And it might be true that the ideas weren't perfect, but like let's all like do it together
and let's pretend we buy into it.
Yeah, that was like a big note when I was coming up, which was like act like you love it,
mm-hmm.
no matter what. It's like that's a form of acting.
Interesting,
because like the back there was like this. I remember a couple months where like bad etiquette. On the back line.
And like weird edits maybe.
Yeah.
Edits.
Laughing, but not like.
Uh-huh.
Like sort of laughing at what just happened. Like that was a bad move.
Yeah. And it's sort of what makes UCB unique is that there is a back line that you can see people's faces.
Yeah.
And if you've got a bitch face.
Don't look at me pointedly.
I looked around the room.
No, you stopped for a real long time.
I think it was coincidental, but I understand.
No, I looked at you because I think maybe the word is offensive.
Oh, no, I'm fine with the word.
Bitch face, yeah. But, like, you need to, like, when social media, like, people started taking improv photos and putting them on MySpace and Facebook. That's right, MySpace.
Bitches.
It became like, oh, my God, that's what I look like when I'm watching my teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that was a bit of a turning point for me in my like, interesting, like Herald Night career where I was like, oh, I'm part of the scenery here.
Mm-hmm.
I should probably stand up straight and not like bite my lip and like scowl during this because I'm literally thinking of my second beat idea.
Right.
I
want to rewind back to something you said a little while ago, which is like you don't think you have the tools to make a team great. Do you think a coach can make a team great, or do you think it's kind of like just not get in the way if a team's going to be great?
Yeah. My theory, and I don't think it's many people agree with it, is that a coach's job is to make this team the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people want the coach to make them
great, better.
Better than the casting. It's like, well, I didn't put this team together.
Yeah.
I think it's like
they chose this if they're an indie group or they were put together by an artistic director. Like, there's only so much you can do.
Right. Sometimes you did and it's still hard.
Oh, you formed a Oh, like the ASP. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Would you agree that...
Or being, I've been in the room before.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's 80-20. Like, I think a coach can have an influence, especially if they're consistent and mm-hmm. going to shows. Like, that's the most important part, is if they're going to shows and seeing the shows and mapping the progress,
mm-hmm.
that can be a definite help. And I think some teams struggle because they don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, it is, it really does come down to the people deciding to work together. I think there is something to the coaching, but it's definitely not like, please make us better. And I think that sometimes hurts teams too, depending on
Anthony King, you know, set a lot of precedents. Like, he was artistic director for 100 years.
Yeah. 100.
More than five, right?
Is it more than five?
I think it was six.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or six.
I believe you.
You know, he created Maude Night, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that I think people don't really talk about, because it was very subtle, was how he kind of opened the door to peer coaching.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when all of the veteran players and all the weekend team improvisers were moving to LA. They were all getting busy with showbiz. And essentially, it was very hard to get someone who was a teacher and like a veteran improviser to coach you.
Someone that you would think is approved by
Anthony. Approved by Anthony King. And a lot of people were sort of complaining about it. Like, I don't know how to get someone to show up for more than a month at a time. And it was probably around the time when I was on Scooch. And he just sent out an email. He's like, I don't know why people think they have to get someone who's been doing improv for 40 years. Like, it's more important to have someone who's dedicated the team and shows up and you trust and you all can agree on is has your best interests. That's more important. And it seemed like overnight, suddenly, Herald team members were coaching Herald teams.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal, I think.
Yeah.
And people don't really talk about it, but it's definitely changed the community and made it a little bit, I think, more spirited or...
Yeah. Some of the best coaches...
Yeah.
Some of the best coaches I've had have been people who you wouldn't think are the like gurus of the community, but just people who showed up and gave you the consistent notes and...
I listened to Achilles' long-form conversation, mm-hmm. and he was Bastion's coach when I was on Bastion.
Great.
And it was like he was a member of the team.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was so great. And he is a little bit of a guru. Like, he sees the Matrix.
I think part of it is
fifth
getting...
Matrix reference.
We're hitting the Matrix.
Achilles is a guru, but he's not... I don't think he's looking to start a cult of personality.
No.
So it would be easy to miss
how
good
Becky
he is.
We're like Becky Drysdale,
mm-hmm.
cult of personality.
Yes.
You know, she's mm-hmm. started her own theater. She's... And she was a coach when I was on Herald Night.
Mm-hmm. The Coster for a little bit, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And...
She was dedicated.
Dedicated, but it was hard to get her. And she had that guru quality.
Yeah. Achilles is a great coach. Hire Achilles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone, if there's one thing to know from this podcast, hire Achilles.
Yep.
Stamatilaki.
Good job.
Great job.
Show off.
Also written in the notebook.
No.
Just kidding.
His notebook's in.
Well, Brian, thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, that's it.
We could go forever, Brian. You're a wealth of knowledge, and I think one of the more passionate teachers in a great way. Even though you don't teach a million classes, I feel like when you talk about them, you're always inspired. I think you're inspired by students, which is always great to see. Amazing improviser. Law firm every Friday at 10:30. Television personality. We didn't even get into that.
It's fine. That's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant.
I love that this podcast is only about improv. It's so great.
We'll get into the other stuff in another podcast. But Brian, thank you so much for
Oh my
being
God,
here.
We talked for an hour and a half.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, but 3 minutes of that we can't repeat.
All right. Anyways, all right, feed the nerds. Bye, everybody. You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversation podcast. If you haven't already subscribed, go ahead and do that. And you can also go to iTunes and leave a rating or review. That would really help us out. In the future, if you want to ask us questions or ask questions to our guests, you can follow us on Twitter at UCB Convo and look for postings there on future guests and future activity. Guys, I'm feeding the nerds left and right. We'll see you next week.